Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Just want to bring you this really significant news, which is coming in the midst of all the drama at Leinster House and talk of this storm. But the CSO Ireland has released these figures telling us that the number of homes built in 2024 are 10,000 below the government's target. Not only that, but they're 6.7% down on 2023. So the number of new homes built in 2024 stands at 30,330. And that is a very significant piece of information coming from the Central Statistics Office. Now, we're going to look ahead to some of the best TV and cinema releases for the month ahead. And to do that, I have producer and director Brian Redden and freelance arts journalist Aoife Barry here with me. And you're both very welcome. But I'm going to ask you to sit tight now because we do have to go to Leinster House and to our reporter Barry Lenehan. And Barry, I believe that you were loitering with intent right outside the room where the leaders were meeting this morning to try and sort this row out. So what news did you get?
And underneath, coming underneath that door, white smoke billowing out in the last few minutes, Claire. It looks like it will be habeas Taoiseach here shortly in Leinster House, in Dáil Éireann. The most recent meeting of the party leaders has just concluded and the Dáil is now to resume business at 20 to 12, in which it is then finally expected to nominate Micheál Martin as Taoiseach and proceed with appointing a cabinet as well. It's believed that the leaders have agreed a wording for the Chief Whip, Hildegard Nocton, to read out to the House on that thorny issue and how the Dáil treats independent TDs who back the government but perhaps want to sit in the opposition benches. So they have agreed a wording around that, and they've also agreed a new schedule for the Dáil's business to conclude by 6:30 this evening, so TDs, their families and indeed staff and workers can return home before the red weather alert kicks in. So it looks like we have an agreement, and this happening after the regional group itself, led by Michael Lowry, said that they would facilitate Dáil business today after the Ceann Comhairle Verona Murphy said she wouldn't recognise the group today. But Michael Lowry himself saying that this was simply a holding position adopted by the Ceann Comhairle, which should be fully determined by the 5th of February. We'll see what Hildegard Nocton says in the next few minutes, but the key word here, the bells are ringing, the TDs are filing back into the chamber. It appears for now, and we did think this yesterday, but for now, that the show is firmly back on the road, Claire.
Yeah, I see, Barry, that they're all taking their seats now as we speak, and the Dáil is expected to resume in the coming minutes. So can we take it then that for today, the four regional independents at the centre of all of this will be sitting with the government and operating on that side of the House and not as opposition TDs?
That is what we can take, that once when it comes back to the cabinet being appointed at around maybe 4:30 or so, that those TDs will be sitting in the government benches for today. They say it's a temporary position. The opposition have pressed the government to rule it out ever happening again. The government have said it's for the Dáil Oireachtas Committee on Dáil Reform, which will be immediately constituted. But we'll see what compromise has been reached in a few minutes. But for now, yes, Michael Lowry from Tipperary, Barry Heenahan from Clontarf, Danny Healy-Ray from Kilgarvan in County Kerry, and Gillian Toole from County Meath. Those independent TDs, they'll be sitting with the government, it would appear, for today. Peace in our time at the moment.
Right, well, Barry, you're our eyes and ears there. We'll be in touch with you before the end of the programme. That's Barry Lenehan. Now, let's come back to Brian and Aoife. Plenty of drama, really, in Leinster House, but we're going to find out what's happening in the world of TV and film. Let's start with this one.
What's the situation?
The police are reporting that armed terrorists have attacked the Israeli athletes.
There's a hostage situation going on right now in the Olympic Village.
ABC wants news to take over.
Your sports, you're in way over your head.
400 yards away from where this is happening.
We are the only people capable of following it live. This is our story.
So that's September 5th, and it focuses on events of the 1972 Munich Olympics and the ABC team that covered the story. There's been a lot of noise around this. I mean, we're expecting this to be really good, Aoife.
Yeah, I think if you really like a kind of an old school 70s thriller, you really get that here. Not just because it's set in the 70s, set in 1972, but it really evokes that era really, really well. And it's very, very tense. It's about, you know, as described in that clip there, about the incident in Munich when several Olympians were taken hostage, you know, very serious event. But it dwells less on what happens with that, and then more on how does ABC Sports and the reporters there, how do they deal with this breaking news breaking right in front of them, literally across the campus from them. It's slightly inside baseball, which I love watching journalists on screen thinking, oh, I've had conversations about similar things, not about something exactly like this, but this idea of the wording, how do you talk about what's happening, how do you let people know, how do you make these decisions around what's going on. The acting's really, really brilliant. Peter Sarsgaard's great in it. John McGorry, who people have seen in past lives a couple of years ago, really, really stand out in this. So it's more about how do they do the journalism around this, and there's a little bit of the politics in it. It's very, very critical of the German response to what happened in it too. Looks really, really beautiful, and the sets and the costumes and everything are stunning. So real, you know, thriller, but about a very tragic incident that happened.
So that's out on the 6th of February, and it's called September 5th, and you'll find it in cinemas. Now we're going to Netflix, Brian, next for season 2 of The Night Agent. Really successful first season.
Yeah. Did you watch it? Did you like it?
No, I didn't watch it.
No, how do we feel about The Night Agent?
I watched about half of the first series. Isn't that what we all say these days about a lot of series? I watched half of it. It was pretty good.
That's a sign. If you didn't watch the whole thing.
Well, you're in the minority there, because like 100 million streams it got in the first 3 weeks when it was on Netflix. It became Netflix's third highest rating TV show. Actually, oddly enough, I didn't watch it the first time it came out, but over Christmas I binge watched the whole thing, and I really, really enjoyed it. It's just a great, silly action thriller. So the premise of it is the night agent is an FBI agent who mans a phone at night in a basement. Doesn't sound very thrilling or very interesting, but this phone that he mans is a phone that agents can ring in if they're in danger. They give a code word, and then he springs into action. So what happened in the first season was he's there one night, he gets a phone call, two FBI agents have been compromised. They end up getting killed, and he gets involved in a case that leads all the way up to the White House. So it's a big, big conspiracy. In this season, he has now been promoted to a squad called the Night Squad, which are a group of these night agents, and he's working now for the FBI. There's another leak in this season. This leak, in the last one, it came from the White House, and this one, it comes from the CIA, and it leads to a possible terrorist attack on New York City. So he, the guy played by Gabriel Basso, an actor I'd never seen before, who's actually really, really good in it. Never heard of him before. He basically has to go rogue, you know, so he goes out to try and stop the terrorists from blowing up New York. So it's a 10-part series. It starts today on Netflix, and it's a real simple, you know, straightforward action thriller.
But enjoyable.
Yeah, it's really enjoyable. Lots of great performances, lots of great action. Starts today on Netflix.
Okay, I think we're going to go now to Leinster House. Everyone has taken Members. Their seat. They've had the prayers. Yeah, let's find out what's going on.
Here this morning to discharge the functions that we have been constitutionally mandated by our constituents to perform. We have a duty to the people who have elected us to conduct ourselves in a way that is befitting of the office we behold. Our primary constitutional function is to nominate a Taoiseach for appointment by Uachtaráin na hÉireann. The issue of the recognition of the Regional Independent Group as a technical group is at the core of yesterday's dispute. On Friday, the 17th of January, I outlined in correspondence to each member of the Business Committee legal advice that my office had received from the OPLA. In that correspondence, I further sought submissions from those who did not agree with the advice I had outlined. I was explicit that I had made no decision of the issue on the recognition of the Regional Independent Group as a technical group in that correspondence. I invited submissions by close of business yesterday. And those of you who did not agree with the advice had the opportunity to make a submission and provide alternate advice for me to consider. I embarked on this process in the interest of fairness and in also recognising that the standing orders could be open to interpretation. As of yesterday, I received one submission on the issue of the Regional Independent Group, and I thank the authors of that submission. Overnight, I considered the submissions and advice that I received. I reviewed and discussed the submission with my staff. It seems to me that there is significant ambiguity in the wording of the Standing Order 170, paragraph 1 and paragraph 4. I will seek senior counsel advice on this matter before coming to an impartial final decision. Therefore, in accordance with my solemn declaration that I will apply the rules as laid down by this House in an impartial and fair manner, and the powers conferred on me by Standing Order 75.3, I have decided that to avoid prejudging my final decision on that dispute, the following technical groups will be recognised for the purposes of any debate in today's proceedings pending a final ruling on the matter. Independent and Parties Technical Group, Independent Technical Group. I trust my decision today provides a roadmap for all parties and all members to work towards an outcome that is acceptable to all. Thank you. I now call...
All right, that's Fiona Murphy's statement there at the start of proceedings in the Dáil. And you heard what she had to say. She's going to seek senior counsel advice on this problem of the regional independence. But for now, they will not be recognised as a technical group. So that is the compromise that has been reached until a final decision is taken. And it would seem, now looking at the screen, Hildegard Nocton is standing, and I assume she's going to invite Albert Dolan again to nominate Micheál Martin as Taoiseach. And it does seem to be very calm in Leinster House today, which makes a change from what we saw yesterday. Any further developments, we'll bring them to you. Will we go back though now to the telly and the cinema
and the other drama
with Aoife and Brian? So the next one we want to talk about is The Brutalist, which is out in cinemas tomorrow. Now, this is hotly tipped for the Oscars.
Absolutely.
It's won a few awards already, so yeah, there's a lot of noise around this one.
A huge amount of noise. I was lucky enough to see this on 70mm. Film nerds would be very excited to hear that it was on 70mm in the IFI a week or so ago. It's a really epic film, and by epic I mean, you know, in length it's 3.5 hours long, although that's becoming quite standard these days. There's an intermission in the middle, so you get a little bit of a break, you know, get some more popcorn. It's about an architect, a fictional Hungarian architect called Laszlo Toth, who survived the Holocaust and arrives on the shores of New York and moves to Pennsylvania, where his cousin is living, and tries to start life again. We soon discover that he's really talented brutalist architect and a local businessman, a very, very rich man, played by Guy Pearce, also spots his talent after looking him up, I think, in the library effectively, and asks him to come on board and build this massive tribute to his mother. So it's about surviving, you know, terrible events. It's about trying to remake your life. It's about whether the American dream is an actual thing, or whether the American dream can actually crumble in front of you while you're watching it happen. Felicity Jones plays his wife, Erzsébet, a really great role, and not your typical, you know, role where you kind of get the woman left to the side. She actually is a very, very strong character, which is great. It looks incredible. The brutalist architecture is really beautiful in it. And it was shot in VistaVision, which is like a widescreen 35mm format, which hasn't been used since the 1960s. The likes of Hitchcock loved it. Mm-hmm. So it looks really, like, the scale is huge. It looks really, really beautiful. The roles are really, really intense. Brady Corbet is the director, and he can do some unusual things when he's making films. He made Vox Lux a few years ago, which is a bit unusual too. So don't expect it, I think, particularly at the end, to go exactly how you think it's going to go. But sit back and relax and enjoy this huge epic thing on screen that you're going to see, and do expect to see this film to be mentioned quite a few times during the Oscar nominations today.
Brian, there are moments in there that will shock people as well.
Yeah, I've seen it as well. Like, I mean, it's a stunning film. It's not an easy watch. It's three and a half hours. It can be very grim in places. But the performances there for me was Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce was just... Yeah. I didn't think he was capable of the performance he gives in this. He plays this wealthy American industrialist who's kind of the benefactor of the Adrian Brody character. Yeah, it's just a great kind of, I can't say too much without giving it away, but there's moments in it that are just shocking, really, you know.
But the duration didn't bother you, right?
No, because, you know, it's kind of really interesting, and, like, it doesn't drag at all. Like, I mean,
there's
really interesting moments in it, and it's about, you know, anti-Semitism, and it's about the American dream gone wrong, and it's about, we hear all these great stories, and it's interesting. Like, I couldn't help thinking about what's going on in America at the moment with Trump and all that, because, like, it's a country that isn't welcoming immigrants in this movie, so it says a lot about what's happening today. So a lot of parallels of what's going on today. And it was fascinating. He's going to get It's going to, we'll know it, whatever, half won, but it's going to get a lot of Oscar nominations.
Yeah, and it's always interesting to see what Adrian Brody does, because he's really picky, isn't he? He's really very careful.
Yeah, and he's had an interesting career. I forgot to mention, he plays Laszlo Toth, of course, the main character. And there are parallels to The Pianist, which is the 2002 film that he won the 2003 Oscar for. There are some parallels there. And he, you know, after that role, he had some unusual roles films that came out that he'd kind of filmed before that. And so his career has been kind of on and off. He's an interesting character. This is a return to form, I would think, in terms of him playing this tortured but really interesting meaty character. And also, Adrian Brody's mother is Hungarian, so she has that history there too. He has that family history. She's a really talented photographer, so he's got that family background as well in it, which I think is really interesting.
Okay, well, we go a little bit more mainstream now into Reacher. Brian, this is your one.
From the sublime to the ridiculous. I've seen so shallow with my choices now. You're talking about The Brutalist.
No, listen, we all remember and note that you like The Brutalist, so let's go to Reacher.
Please note that I do like some nice high art films. So let's go right down to low art now, to Reacher. I also like Reacher. And season three.
Multitudes.
Yeah, season three of Reacher is going to be starting on Amazon Prime later on in February. I think it's February the 20th. I don't know if anyone's ever seen Reacher, but Reacher's based on all these books written by Lee Child. So he's an interesting character. Tom Cruise played him in two movies. Mm. And everyone went mad for Tom Cruise playing him because Reacher's like 6'7" tall. He's a massive man mountain of a character. And little Tom Cruise was playing him in the movies. And nobody liked the Tom Cruise movies. But everybody loves this series because there's an actor called Alan Richson. I don't know if you've ever seen him, but he literally is like a walking fridge. The guy is enormous. Like, you know, he's not much of an actor, but he's a very good action star. So basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Jack Reacher is a former major in the US Army. He's a military police guy. He's got a particular set of skills, as Liam Neeson would say. His skills run the gamut of everything from being able to disembowel you with a penknife to MacGyver-type skills to create a plane out of a matchbox. So this guy, he's gone off grid, right? So he walks around America. He's got no phone. He's got no passport. He's got no wallet. I don't know how he survives. Seems to wear the same T-shirt for the whole season. But occasionally, he gets calls from the CIA to say, come and give us a hand here, Reacher, will you? We need a guy with your skills to help us out. So in this season, there's a big... he has to infiltrate a drug ring, basically, and take down a drug lord. The drug lord is played by Anthony Michael Hall, who's the guy from all those, Brat Pack movies from 16 Candles. You won't recognise him in this, like, he's a real evil bad guy. So basically, if you want a bit of action, just mindless, senseless, ridiculous action, where a guy can, just come in and just break someone's arm with a toothpick, this is your
This is the thing service that my husband puts on the telly when I'm going to bed.
Exactly.
Now, we're going to the Bob Dylan movie, the Timothée Chalamet movie, A Complete Unknown. It's the story of Bob Dylan's life. We'll hear a bit of it and then we'll have a chat.
200 people in that room, each one wants me to be somebody else. They should just let me be.
Let you be what?
Whatever it is they don't want me to be.
All right, so that's a clip from the Timothée Chalamet vehicle about Bob Dylan. Did you like it?
I really enjoyed this. And I tell you what, I saw a clip from it before I went to see the film that they shared online. That was him talking to Johnny Cash. And I thought, oh no, this looks a little bit hammy. I don't know, how's Timothée Chalamet going? I mean, he looks like him. But I actually had such a ball watching it. I mean, just like how Bob Dylan is his own, myth maker, there is some lightly fictionalized things going on here. You know, it's created for cinema. Don't expect it to be a blow-by-blow exact account of what's going on or to give you a huge amount of insight into what's going on in Bob Dylan's mind. It's set in the early 1960s. It begins with him arriving in New York City. He goes to the hospital where Woody Guthrie, who had Huntington's disease, is very, very ill. And he meets him there and he basically proves himself as a musician to Pete Seeger and to Woody Guthrie in the film. And that's the beginning of his life as this kind of part of the folk revival, Greenwich Village, in New York City. And you follow him for the next few years up until that famous moment at the Newport Folk Festival when Dylan went electric and there were allegedly some booze in the audience, definitely, at the time. So you get just an insight into his life, who he was and how he tried to make himself into this character. And Timothée Chalamet is really great. Now, I did feel like, I don't know if Brian agrees, you could tell that some takes he was like talking like Bob Dylan and then the next take he wasn't talking like Bob Dylan and he was like, you could tell, I felt like editing wise they weren't paying a huge amount of attention to his accent, which was kind of bothering me a bit. But he sounded great when he was singing. His guitar playing was pretty good and the female characters I felt were pretty good. There's a character, Sylvie Russo, who's based on Susie Rotolo, who was the very influential girlfriend of Bob Dylan's. She was great, but they leaned a little bit too much on the like the lovelorn woman. And you're like, she was a powerful artist. So give her kudos, you know.
All right. I have very little time left. Yeah. Is it a yes or a no for you, Brian, on this?
Quite with the Bob Dylan one. Great movie.
Enjoyed it.
Oh, I loved it. That was fantastic. And it was interesting because Dylan read the script and Dylan said, that's okay, go ahead and do it. He doesn't come across as a particularly nice guy in it.
It does get into the,
He likes the Dylan movie. He likes The Brutalist. Yeah. He likes Reacher, so you know, you're an all-rounder.
A man for all seasons.
Fully rounded guy.
Going to get more from Leinster House after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.